Ron Ananian.
How do you get behind a product that there's no parts for it? That just doesn't make any sense.
Rolling down the road at 8 miles a gallon.
The Car Doctor.
You're telling me, brother, that you brought your truck to three shops.
Yeah.
They can all hear a problem.
Yeah.
And all three of them are saying they can't fix it.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
How do you know that used car you're looking at, or maybe that Uber you're riding in, is actually safe? Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, welcome aboard, and stand by. We've got a great couple hours of automotive talk for you today. I noticed it this week in the shop. I was thinking about it. It doesn't happen often, but once in a while, I'll let somebody bring us tires and we'll mount their tires. Tires are sort of this, they're not a part in my mind in the sense of liability. It's a tire. There's tire manufacturers, there's tire companies. It's easier to go through the tire company than it is to find the guy that made the water pump in China that they're trying to get you to install. So it's a little bit of a softer liability factor. So, Will brought us two tires this week to put on his Honda Accord. And, Will's an infrequent customer. There's no other way to say it. We see him once, every 12, 14, 18 months. I'm not sure why. The car just seems to pile up mileage. But he's an Uber driver. He's driving this 165,000 mile 2010 Honda Accord. And he likes to try and do his own repair, save a few bucks. And I get it. Everybody's out to save a buck. There's nothing wrong with that. But he brought us a pair of tires today. Sohar, some cockamamie name that you just don't recognize. And I had to go through it with him. And he had gotten them online. It was from one of the major tire online purchasers. So that made me feel good, because at least if there's a failure, we can go back and sue the tire retailer. It's not like they came direct from China. But, made in China, right on the side. No name brand. And they rode terrible. They rode absolutely terrible. I think you would have been better off riding around with steel wheels and just no rubber on the road. It was just that bad of a tire. And this is on dry road. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like on a wet road. But, maybe I'm looking for too much. I don't know. But my point becomes, there's a lot of people like Will out there that are picking their own brands of parts and tires and, this looks good and we'll try this and it says new and it's online. Online makes it good, right? The internet can solve everything. I'm waiting for the internet to bring us world peace, a cure for cancer, and time travel. Then all our problems are over. And then I thought about the fact that he's an Uber driver. And I get it that he's trying to maintain his car for Uberville. But the sad part is he really needed four tires. It wasn't just two. And I imagine, like some people, Will has that mindset of, let me just put two tires on it. I'll burn them up. It won't really matter. Round black holds air. Who cares? And the back two tires were, they weren't the slicks that the fronts were. Which, the front tires were probably bad 3 months ago, and he's just getting around to changing them now. So, how much further is he going to push the rears? And I'm thinking, somebody's going to get in this car as an Uber driver or as an Uber rider and say, take me wherever and assume it's safe. And it made me think in my mind, I think Uber needs to come up with a certification program. And I looked on their website and I didn't see anything listed. I think Uber needs to certify their cars or mechanically sound. Because who regulates that? And I was thinking about this. Don't laugh if you're from New York City and you're listening to the show, but at least a New York City taxi cab kind of has to meet certain standards, right? It's got to be yellow. It's got to have that obligatory dent in the fender. That sort of makes it a New York City taxi. It's got to have the grill kind of duct taped in. But mechanically, yeah, I mean, it's got 300,000 miles on it. I've been in a few taxis that I wondered if I was going to get out of in one piece. But you got to feel like you hope somebody's working on it. it occurred to me, Uber is counting on the driver, counting on the mechanic working on it. But what if the mechanic working on it, like we all know there's bad mechanics, what if he's an idiot? And now he's maintaining this Uber vehicle. And how safe is that Uber? And then he goes to sell that Uber vehicle, and you go to buy it, and you look at it as the consumer, and you say, well, the tires are round, black, they hold air, it stops, it starts, it moves. It makes the case for having a mechanic look at it that much more important, and that much of a stronger argument that the internet has empowered people with more information, but not necessarily the right information. And their skill set and their level of knowledge just, it's not there. Don't count on the internet to solve all your problems. Information, but question that information too. Hello and welcome, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Let's, without any further ado, let's kick the garage doors open and let's go to Pete in Minnesota with an 11 Kia. Pete, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, hi, Ron. Big
yes,
fan.
Sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
We have a 2011 Kia Sorento V6 3.5 liter, and about a week ago I started her up, and engine light came on. It started shaking a little bit, not bad, but a little bit, idling kind of rough.
This sounds like that scene from Airplane. She's starting to shake. She's starting to shimmy.
That's exactly what was happening.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I took it right over there to O'Reilly's and had them scan it, and I got a P2187 running lean in bank one.
Okay.
And but then the curious thing for me is it's leaving black soot out the tailpipe, which would mean it's running rich. Is that right?
Well, soot out the tailpipe. It's right. So it could be a lean condition trying to be overcome with a rich command. So, you know, regardless, have you looked at fuel trim? Do you have the ability to do scan data?
No, I have not done that.
Okay.
So basically, that's all I've done so far. Other than out of paranoia, I went out and got one of those head gasket leak tests with the tube and you put it. Yeah, and that came back fine. So other than that, that's all I've done so far.
So let me say it like this. How old are you, Pete?
38.
Okay. So when you turn 60, you're going to go get that physical, right? You're probably going to get, the finger and the look-see and,
right?
The whole nine yards, right? But you're not going to do that now. So don't do the head gasket test now, not yet. You're jumping the gun, all right?
Okay.
Because you're not 60 yet. As the 3rd Marine said as they were going over the side of the ship at Iwo, let's wait till we get there to see if we're going to die. All right. So, and I kind of know that from someone who was there. He was 3rd Marines at Iwo, and he was a tough old son of a gun. He told me the whole story, but he was third wave. So let's go through basics. Do you have a scan tool? Do you have the ability to read data stream?
No, I don't.
Okay. So on the Christmas list this year, we got to get a scan tool.
And
the idea here is that you're it's seeing lean fuel condition on bank one. All right.
Right.
And not to say that we want to just focus on bank one. And here's where not having a scan tool hurts us. A lean fuel condition, by definition, let's start the conversation here. 0% is a balanced fuel mixture, okay? It's the correct amount of air to the correct amount of fuel. Agreed?
Right.
If the system, the system has to have the ability to vary and adjust a little bit. So Pete's driving down the road. He's going down to the local 7-Eleven, to get a hot dog and a soda, a big Slurpee. And, while he's driving along, maybe the fuel trim changes a little bit. It adds a little bit of fuel. It takes away a little bit of fuel. It's got some tuning capability without falling out the parameter or the limit of what's bad. So you might see plus or minus 8% either way. All right? Just like in high school when they taught us geometry and they had that numbered timeline that had zero and plus numbers and negative numbers, and we all said, what's this numbered line going to teach us? It teaches us fuel trim 30 years later. So, plus or minus 8%, plus or minus 10%, that's good. When the trim number hits, you can hear I got Lucy in studio with me today. She's scratching. I can't get all these answers myself. I got to count on the dog. So, if it's when it hits plus 25% for conversation's sake, the computer goes, hey, Pete's Kia is at its electronic limit of adjustment. I've got to tell Pete that it's working too hard to maintain fuel mixture and a balance, turns on the check engine light and sets a fault code. 25%, right?
Right.
So if we had a scan tool and we looked at it and we saw 25% on bank one and 22% on bank two, it's not going to set a fault for bank two, is it?
Nope.
It's got 3% to go. But if normal accepted industry balanced air fuel mixture by trim numbers is 0 to 10% plus or minus, bank two sounds like it's a little cockeyed also, right?
Right.
So here's where we need a scan tool, because I can't tell you to chase bank one, bank two, both one, neither. This could be anything from a restriction on the air intake side to low fuel pressure to a vacuum leak on a particular manifold side to, a weak.
Lots of things.
So you did the right first step. You scanned it, okay? And that's the first step, looking at codes. But now we got to go and look at the rest of it. Now you've told me that your head hurts and you've got a headache. Now you've got to get me heart rate, blood pressure, and the rest of the information, and then we could have the rest of the conversation.
Okay.
All right.
That's what I'll do then.
So,
yep.
But that's where you want to go. You want to find
get the
somebody
fuel trim
that's,
then. Yep.
Yeah. And listen, I don't want to take it to somebody and they look up fuel or they look up the code P2187 and the first thing on the chart is this could be caused by a, and the first thing on the list is an oxygen sensor. Pete,
right.
You need an oxygen sensor. Yeah, no, that's not what we're talking about. All right. The first thing you need is a diagnosis.
Right.
All right.
Exactly. Okay.
So,
yeah.
So hang in there, kiddo. All right. And no head gaskets yet. All right, let's not panic. All right,
think of the
Marines, brother. All right, you take good care and have a good rest of the weekend.
You too.
Take care. Bye bye. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We are back right after this.
Little GTO, you really looking fine. Three deuces and a four speed.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
By the way, next week, let me look at the Grinch. Let me see what he looks like. Yep, Tom says next week that we're going to be giving away copies of OBD2 Diagnostics Made Easy by one of our favorite authors, Steve Cook. From, I think, Cincinnati. We've got a couple of copies of that. We'll be handing it out from the prize closet. And Tom will check us, find out where Steve is from. But Stephen Cook, you've been trying to find them up on Amazon. We were able to pry a couple of copies out of Steve's hand, and we'll be sending those out. So you can call in next week, and you have to get past Tom and make Tom smile. Anybody that can make Tom smile next week, they're in the running for a book. So if they can do that, then that's all possible. So let's get on over and talk to let's go talk to Steve in New Hampshire. Steve in New Hampshire, sir. 04 Chevy Tahoe. How can I help?
Yes, Ron.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon to you.
excellent. Took my Chevy Tahoe offline for about 4 months earlier this summer. Replaced the front diff, both axles, hubs, the whole kit and caboodle while I was in there.
Okay.
And recently, recent as last week, I got the opportunity to, test out the four-wheel drive. It's running great. I put a used differential in that I get from the junkyard. And a question for you, though, is I don't remember this happening on the previous differential, but this system seems to have a mind of its own. It will shift from two-wheel high into four-wheel high or four-wheel low. Any ideas?
Dumb question. How do you know? And I know the answer you're going to give me, but I want to hear you say it. How do you know?
There's a four-wheel drive switch up by the left side of the vent.
And you're seeing the lights change?
Exactly.
Okay. Now, do you feel the truck change as far as like a shutter, like there's a, like all of a sudden you're driving along at 40 in two-wheel drive, and all of a sudden it slams into a four-wheel drive? Is there an abrupt change? Or are you just seeing the lights on the dash?
It doesn't do it when I'm driving at 40, 50, or highway speed. It will do it when I leave the office, start the vehicle up, put it from park into drive, and I'll look down the other day, and I'm like, I was actually driving around the city of Nashua, just, you know, running a few errands, and I'm like, this feels like it's in four-wheel drive.
Okay.
Sure enough, I look down, and the auto four-wheel drive light is on. I don't know if this system is that intelligent. The technology was there for an 04, or we have this thing has a mind of its own.
Now, the differential that you replaced it with, you verified numbers, models the same. Same generation, and if I recall, in 04, is there an actuator in the front of this differential or not?
I believe there is, yes.
And you swapped the differential, or you pulled the differential, you swapped the actuator, used your actuator, or the actuator that was in the axle?
The actuator that was in the axle.
Do you still have the old one?
I do. I save everything. I'm like a pack rat.
Well, that's okay. I'm kind of like that myself. And they look the same. Your harness plugged in, no issues.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So the first thing you really need to do is scan it for codes, and not with an OBD2 scanner. Here's a case where you need to use year, make, model. Here's a perfect example of why an OBD2 scanner won't work, because...
Okay.
Is a vehicle going into four-wheel drive, and I'm going to let you answer the question, is a vehicle going into four-wheel drive likely going to affect federal emission levels?
Mm-hmm.
No. So, therefore, under the law, it's not required to be made available under OBD2 scan capability. So here's a case where you need year, make, model to go in. You know, do we have anything in the way of a transfer case encoder motor? You know, could this be a coincidence? Mm-hmm. Could this be something just totally unrelated to the front differential replacement, or do we have a fault with the actuator that's in the front differential that you swapped over?
Sure.
You know, if the actuators are the same, you know, and you want to try and take the shortcut, it's easy enough to swap your actuator in. You know your actuator worked. I'm guessing that you know you probably spun one of the carrier bearings in the front of your old differential, and it was noisy, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
the steel cup bearings tend to spin in the aluminum housing. Just as an aside, before the clock takes me, real quick, is just be aware, Steve, that you can. There's a product out there from Luke. I can't think of their name, but it's called Hub Oil. I'm going to get the name, and I'm going to talk about it on air. It's called Hub Oil. And we put it in the those aluminum older GM diffs, and it tends to give a better heat shear strength to the fluid and protects the differentials more. I'll talk about it in the next half hour. I'll go look it up online when I get a chance to a computer, but you might want to add that to it too for further protection. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Let's go over to Joe in Manchester, Connecticut, 064 to Escape. Joe, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
How you doing?
Good, sir.
I have a 2006 Ford Escape.
Okay.
And the problem is, I think it's in the alarm system somewhere. If I leave the car locked, the alarm goes off about every 20 minutes. And all the dome lights are coming on also. So what I did, I pulled all the dome lights out, and I still have the same problem with it going off every 20 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if it's somewhere in the alarm system. I've been thinking about pulling the fuse out for that.
Well, let's do this, okay? So within this vehicle... there is something called a gem module. And I know we could all sit there and say, gee, this car is such a gem, but it stands for generic electronic module. And a gem module on a Ford product is kind of like a body module on a lot of other cars. And the gem module does a lot of the body functions. They'll run information for locks and alarms and, you know, other body function requirements through this module. If your mechanic can get in there, all right, with his scan tool, and his scan tool can look at the gem module, and a lot of the aftermarket, or even obviously the Ford factory tool would do it, you could look at the gem module and look to see, are there any fault codes? All right. This is probably being caused by a sticking or stuck door ajar, or even a hood, if it has hood ajar, a hood ajar switch, all right, or a switch out of adjustment. All right.
Oh, okay.
And the fact that the dome lights are coming on tells me it's really a door ajar switch. So the question is which one? All right.
Yeah.
A gem module will tell us a couple of things if we do a scan of that. It'll tell us, you know, maybe there's a code pointing towards a left front, right front, left rear, etc. door. It will also tell us there's also going to be a line of information in there called alarm event data. And it will tell us, because it tracks every, the gem module tracks every alarm event. And if the scan tool can look at that gem module, it'll tell you which door switch cause the alarm to go off. You know, do you have an alarm system on your house, Joe?
Yes, I do.
And you know how when the alarm goes off, you call up the alarm company, and the guy will come out, and he'll access the button panel, and he'll say, "Hey, Joe, the master bedroom upstairs window, the switch is sticky, right?
Okay.
Or the switch goes bad." The gem module does the exact same thing, and it'll track that, and it'll tell it, "Hey, this is where we got to go." Now, in the event that for some reason there's no codes, or you can't get into the gem module, or the gem module doesn't provide any information, the fact that the dome lights go on tells me that it's body or rear hatch, you know, the rear gate related switch. So you could try, you know, the alarm goes off, go out, lean on a door. You know, just give a door, put your weight against the door. And see, does the dome light start to go out? Because you may have delayed lighting where it doesn't go out right away. It's not that the car is broken. The car thinks a door has tried to become open. And pushing on the door may at least turn off the door ajar, or the light, rather, the dome light. It won't necessarily turn off the alarm right away, but at least it tells you, hey, you know, I pushed in on the right rear door. The dome light went out. You know what? I've got to get a right rear door switch.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Where would a gem module be located on that?
But I believe it's down driver's side underneath the dashboard in the left kick panel area. But he's going to access it. They're going to access it through the OBD2 diagnostic port. All right.
Yeah.
You know, so if they can get into the OBD2 diagnostic connector, and they've got something that, you know, does year, make, model, not just OBD2 generic, then, you know, scan data, then you're in like Flynn. You're all set. So.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you, Ron.
You're very welcome, sir.
The help.
You're very welcome, sir. If you need more, we're right here for you. You take good care. Let's go to Terry in Michigan and see what's going on here. Terry, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey, Ron.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate you taking the call.
You're welcome.
And I normally listen to you on Sundays, even though you recorded on Sundays, but I have a 2000 with Sabra.
Okay.
And my heat started going out only a couple months ago.
Right.
And back flushed my heater core.
Right.
I heard you say that also. I changed my thermostat. It's running 195 degrees. And then my actuator valve was kind of floating a little bit. So I kind of stuck a screwdriver in it and got it to the heat mode, but I'm still getting heat, and then it goes cold again.
Okay.
The heat, the cold.
What? First, let me ask a couple questions. How do you know it's 195 degrees?
Well, I got a digital readout on my thermostat, and it reads 195. Yes.
You have a digital readout on your what?
On the thermostat. Yes.
On
my car. Yes.
on the temperature control, you mean, on the temperature gauge?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So,
yes, sir.
So, and if you touch the upper radiator hose when it reads 195 degrees, it's warm to the point of being uncomfortable to hold on to?
Correct.
And when you touch one of the heater hoses, at least one of the heater hoses feels as warm as the upper radiator hose?
No. No, it's not as warm. That's why I back flush my heater core.
Okay. Is either one of the heater hoses as warm as the radiator hose?
No, that I have not checked. No.
You know, because I mean, listen, it's got to be hot in and cooler out. So you might have your hand on the exit line versus the feed. You might have your hand on the outlet, not the inlet. Now, but let's just talk past that a little bit. So let's get to the point where, okay, the radiator hose, the car is hot, the heater hose is hot, the outlet's cooler, and you're driving along, you've got good heat. Your definition of good heat, Terry, is gauged by what? Your hand in front of the heater?
No, it's not good heat. It's just warm.
Okay.
It is not good heat.
Okay. Okay.
It will defrost. I'm in Michigan.
Right.
So it will defrost my windshield. However, it's not hot heat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do me a favor.
You know what I'm saying?
Do you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you?
About 20 miles down the road.
You know, or jump in there you can, or if there's something closer, pick up, you know, spend $10. Pick up an in-dash temperature thermometer.
I know, the vent thing. I heard you say that.
Yeah.
I did not do that, but I know my heater is not hot.
Right, so here's why I want you to do that. Because I hate to gauge myself by, well, I think it's cool, or I think it's cool. I want to know how much it's dropping. You're saying it's never hot. How hot is not hot?
Well, correct. Correct. But right. It does go cold. I mean, cold as in the air is actually like cool.
But it starts warmer, right?
It does get warm, but it does not get hot as it would normally do. As of last year, it just started this year.
But
could it be the actuator valve? Is the actuator valve, is that possible?
The piece under the dashboard? Sure, absolutely.
No, it's in the glove box, right? My actuator valve is in the glove box.
Okay,
right.
But before we go there, kiddo, because it'll help in diagnosis, all right? Because you're telling me it goes cold. Actuator valves,
yes.
You know, temperature actuators don't really change position on their own. If they do, they're being driven there. All right. What I'm concerned about is, you know, I need to get a better feel, no pun intended, for the temperature of this in terms of heat, what's really going on temperature wise. Because what I'd like to know is when you're talking about, and you're, if I'm hearing you right, it starts out warm, never great, and then it goes cold. And what I'm thinking about is, do you have a seeping head gasket? Are you putting air into the system? Are you using any coolant? Are you seeing a variation in coolant level in either the radiator or the overflow bottle the next morning? But before I take you there, go buy a thermometer. Call me back next week. Give me some actual numbers, and let's talk about it. I want to know how widespread of a temperature range we're talking about, and then we can continue this conversation. Get yourself out to a local O'Reilly Auto Parts. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's get over and talk to Renee in Houston. Renee, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question for the guys on the radio.
Okay.
And I took my car in and had a wheel bearing replaced. Well, they replaced the wrong one. What I really need now is a front end change of rotors and the brakes. And I was just wondering how they would handle something like that.
So the question here becomes, when you took it into the shop, what did... Tell me what happened. What transpired? You went up and you talked to the service writer at the counter?
I had one of their mechanics drive with me, and there
right.
was a hum.
Right.
And he thought it was coming from the rear, everything like that. Well, I get it, and they replaced the front one. And I drove it after I got it back, thinking it was all taken care of, and it wasn't. The Hummus, and the manager or the assistant manager wrote me. I said, "Hear that, Hum? That's why I brought it in." So I didn't change it at all.
Okay.
So it's not like the front one was going out.
Right. So did you? You know, did they go through? I would expect they would. Did they go through? You know, hey, Renee's here. Her car's making this noise. The noise is from the front replaced front wheel bearing. They gave you an estimate. And you signed it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know about the estimate, but they gave me a rough estimate of what it cost for a front wheel bearing, which the rear wheel bearing, which is really the one that was going out, it cost less. So the front one was $380.
Right.
And then the back one was like $275.
And what kind of car is
but
this?
But I didn't need the front one.
Right. What kind of car
but
is this?
Now it's a 2006 Chevy Malibu Max.
Okay.
190,000 miles.
Just broken in, kiddo.
I know. It's good for 300,000. I like my car.
Yeah, it's a great car.
But I love it. But you know what I really need now is I need to have the rotors and a front brake job, because I said, yeah, you're going to need that, and I knew I needed that. But I was thinking of asking them, take it back to the same place and give them a chance to remedy their
absolutely
their oops.
Let me ask you this. Are they your regular mechanics? Have you been there before?
It was a new mechanic shop I went to. They had very good reviews, and they're always busy, so obviously people are using them.
Right.
And the manager was very nice, and he was like, you know, oh, gee, sorry. You know, what do you say? They're not going to say, oh, yeah, we replaced the wrong part. And I get that, but I want them to take the labor from that job and the labor of the changing the rotors and the brakes, and I will pay for the parts as a remedy.
Tell them that. You know, listen.
Say, is that appropriate, or is that...
You know,
because they screwed up, and
well,
they're not going to sit there and say, "Hey, we screwed up."
Well,
you know,
from what you're telling me, they changed both wheel bearings, front and back, on one side.
They changed the front one; it did not remedy it. The real problem was the rear one.
And then they changed the rear one.
So I got a free wheel bearing. I'll pay for the part, but I want you to apply the labor of that to the job of my brake job now that I need to get done.
But here's
and
how
change
you,
out the rotors.
But here's how you have to position it to them. Okay.
Okay.
Is you want to tell them, listen, I'm looking for a repair shop. You guys have good reviews. I came here in good faith. You know what? Maybe there was some miscommunication, but I was clear that I had a noise from the car. That's what I wanted fixed. If the miscommunication occurred, it occurred because I feel like you guys misdiagnosed it. So how about we do this? How about I'll pay for parts. You guys cover the labor. Let's begin our relationship anew, and I'll be with you guys from this point on. See how they handle that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
See,
and I'm not
that.
Only wanting to replace the labor of what it would cost to change out the rotors and the brakes, a brake job. They said it was like $330.
Right.
Well, I spent $388 on a job I didn't need.
Right.
You see.
So you're.
But I have the parts, so I get the benefit. But
right.
Take the labor of that job and the labor of what it would cost to change out the rotors and the brakes, and then we'll all be happy. With
right. It. Right. And see what they do with that, and then take it from there. Call us back. Let us know what happens. I'm Ron Anning and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. First of all, let's get a couple of pieces of maintenance done. Bottom of the hour, I was talking to a gentleman about his four-wheel drive differential and hub oil. It was Lucas. I kept wanting to say Luke oil, but I knew it wasn't Luke oil. It was Lucas. Lucas hub oil. It's a very heavy, thick, heat fighting, creates a very good solid film, very good for front differentials on those, that generation GM product 0405 with the aluminum housing, the steel bearings, they always spin in the carrier. So, Lucas hub oil works really well. For Renee in Houston that we just spoke to, I think there was a little bit of confusion. I have to apologize because I think she didn't realize she was calling the wrong radio show. She was looking for a couple of guys. I knew who she was looking for, but it wasn't us, but I know we gave her solid information. Just, you know, there's a classic example of, you know, what goes wrong. There was no communication, I think, there in the repair shop. Where was the noise from? You know, did she give approval to fix the front wheel bearing? And then did she give approval to fix the rear wheel bearing? Auto repair is a process. It's not something that's just automatic, that you can just, it can't have a life of its own, especially not when you're using a repair shop for what sounds like the first time. You know, it's just like going to a doctor. After a while, you go to a doctor, and the doctor starts giving you that, you know he's going to cut something off, but you're okay with it because he's done it before, all right? So you've got to equate that to the same part of the auto repair process. How many times have you been there? Have they cut things off that maybe you could have used or maybe you didn't need? So you've got to ask yourself that question as well. So, Renee, if you happen to get a chance to listen to this, just go back and talk to them and see what happens. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. Till the next time, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.